Hey everyone, I'm Jay.
And I'm Scott, and welcome to Witches Betwixt.
Today we're going to be talking about creating inclusive group rituals. Inclusive group rituals meaning inclusive in terms of people's gender identity, sexuality, as well as...
Keeping people involved.
Maintaining the energy. And being respectful of any people's paths who might differ from yours as the ritual coordinator. And we'll talk about instances where it matters a lot and where it doesn't matter very much.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's a lot of different reasons that you could be creating a group ritual. There's a lot of different spaces. So, do you want me to start off or do you want you to start off?
I'll let you start off.
Okay. So, I think, I'm just going to talk about, like, two main experiences that I have in creating rituals for large groups of people.
Mm-hmm.
And these rituals were intended for... Okay, well, the one I actually wrote. The other one I was just a participant of.
Right.
So, these were both at, public, like, open to the public events. So, there was a group that operated outside of the, you know, like, in the suburbs, just outside of Philadelphia, that I used to be a part of, and I did, was it Ostara? It was Ostara.
Mm-hmm.
I did an Ostara ritual. And, the basics of the ritual, and because it's not like a mystery secret tradition, so I feel fine discussing the specifics of the ritual. Essentially, the ritual was intended to, so basically, there were two people. They were like sort of like actors in my little play that I had set up, and one I had a woman represent the goddess, and I had a guy represent the god. And basically, he came in before the ritual and essentially said, like, the goddess, we have to awaken her. We have to awaken her because Ostara is springtime. It's a time when, you know, from underneath the snows of winter, everything's starting to awaken. And, you know, he's looking for her, which is the whole point of this ritual. And so... everyone sort of went into this ritual with this mindset, this is what we're doing. We need to find the goddess and we need to awaken her. So then there was a procession in. No big deal. In the center of the room was a white sheet. And underneath that white sheet was the woman who was playing the goddess. Which I will... I know you watched our first episode, bless... thank you also for watching the podcast, but also thank you so much for doing that ritual because you were amazing. She was under that sheet, motionless. It was a white sheet, and she was under there.
Oh, I know who you're talking about.
Yeah.
And she was a doll.
Under, yeah. You're great. We love you. And she was under there. And because when I wrote this ritual, that's exactly what I had in mind. And I was like, this is what I want you to do. And if you don't want to do, like, we could figure something out, but this is what I want. I think this would be really, really cool. And she was agreeable. It was really awesome. So she was underneath the sheet, and essentially there was this, you know, like, sort of like energy-raising chant kind of thing, and the idea was to raise energy to awaken the goddess, and, you know, we chanted, we rose the energy, and she started to move underneath the sheet. She was so motionless under there, a lot of people didn't know she was under there initially. And it was a white sheet, obviously, to represent the snows of winter.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea was for this reveal, and, you know, and what it was is, so, like, she, come, like, the sheet, like, kind of, like, falls away, she stands, and they, like, embrace, and what they were doing, because... creating a ritual is just as much of a performance, as especially for a group, it's just as much of a performance as it is magic.
Mm-hmm.
So they sort of like did this like embrace kind of thing and kept the focus on them while I had like a team of roadies take the sheet away and then bring out the altar for the rest of the ritual. And the rest of the ritual, I believe it was... taking seeds, and you could get, like, wisdom from the goddess, or... That part is fading from my mind. But anyway, it was a really nice ritual. I liked it. I even had, like, a certain, like, drumming going on. Like, I coordinated this whole thing. It was the first time I ever did it.
Mm-hmm.
And it was for open to the public. And my pacing on it was a little fast. I realize in hindsight. It was a very fast ritual, I think, because I was just like, okay, each thing needs to go. And
yeah.
I could have done it a little differently, but overall, it was well received by the people participating in the ritual. And then I got feedback. Or rather, I didn't get feedback, but I had moved into a different role within that group, and then I had access to, they had basically post-mortem discussions after the rituals. And not all of it was bad, but the things that they nitpicked, I thought were absolutely ridiculous. Because I really feel like they didn't contribute much to the point of the ritual. Like, the point of the ritual was made.
I agree. Right. I wasn't there, but...
Yeah, the point of the ritual was made, and everyone who participated in it was like, this was great. Like, thank you so much for doing this, and thank you everyone who was in it. But here were the main sticking points that I remember that they had issues with. Too much incense.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay. When I had gotten there, I had forgotten what they considered the directions. Because I think they were on the corners of the room. But, like, what I was... You know how, like, it's never true north.
Oh, my God. We did that when we were in Coven. I told you guys, technically speaking, it's in the corners. And you just
shift it. You're like, okay, well, that wall is this. So, but basically, I think I had moved everything one wall over because... Basically, I had looked at this corner, and I had been like, oh, well, this is really more north than that. So I had shifted everything by one without realizing it, because I used a compass. I went in there and used a compass, and I was like, okay, well, that's true north, so I'm going to use this for the directions. Because I never remember what that specific place used for the directions. So they didn't like, and I messed up the directions, even though they're never really true directions anyway. And the other thing was my ritual attire. Yeah.
Your ritual attire?
My ritual attire. So I still don't have a lot of money, but then I didn't have, I think I had like the cape kind of, the cloak thing that I have. I had that, but I was like, it's Ostara. I don't want to wear black. That's not the point of Ostara. So I had worn these, like, light tan cargo shorts. I was barefoot or in socks or something like that, which a lot of people don't do in that ritual room. A lot of people don't do that for public ritual, but I was like, no, I want to be, like, earthy about it. And I had on this, like, nice forest green, like, button-down shirt. And I had on, like, a Jeff cap kind of thing. I felt very witchy. I felt very appropriately... Mm-hmm. dressed for that ritual.
Right.
And they did not feel that way. So, it was very, you know, Jay wasn't dressed appropriately. I didn't feel like the ritual, I didn't feel the energy because of my choice of ritual wear. And keep in mind, this is an open pagan ritual, so people are wearing, like, literally t-shirts and jeans.
I was gonna say that. Do you know how many times...
So, I think there was a different expectation of the ritual leader.
Okay.
Yeah. And then, the other thing was, is during the chant, it was hard to hear, because it was a chant that I had pulled from a song, so it wasn't, like, one of the typical chants, you know, like, skim through the hymn book, and, you know, you find, like, one of the whatever chants.
Mm-hmm.
So, it was a chant that I had made up, but I had designed it so you could learn it on the fly, like, it wasn't difficult. And then there was some complaints about, like, oh, we couldn't really understand the chant, and it wasn't one of the usual ones, and blah, 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 blah. So, that is where it leads me into creating rituals for the public.
Yes.
First things first is you cannot please everyone.
Yeah.
You will never please everyone. And just don't feel bad about it. And don't be ashamed. Don't feel pressured to please everyone, because it is literally impossible.
Now, I don't have the same experience as you do with larger groups planning rituals. I obviously helped you plan and wrote our coven rituals. Mm-hmm. So a much smaller group of people. But yeah, I mean, I think that's one of those things that you can learn universally. Mm-hmm. You're not going to please everyone in a situation like that.
Yeah. And depending what the situation... Now, so if I had designed and done that ritual for coven, granted, it would have been way harder to pull off because we're such a smaller group.
Yeah.
But suppose our coven was maybe 10, 15 people. I feel like my choice of attire would not have fucking mattered. Too much incense. I mean, there's literally incense at every ritual.
Not only that, there are some rituals that exist in which you have to have 4 or 5 braziers or incense burners in which are pluming with resinous smoke in order to conjure and summon particular deities. So if you, like... I'm sorry.
I mean, I don't want it to seem like an... I don't know, like an inconsiderate or like sort of ableist sort of mentality, because I understand people are asthmatic. I get it.
I get that too.
But I didn't think that incense was going to be an issue, because in every previous ritual at that space, we had incense. So I didn't think it would be a problem.
Right.
That's the only reason why I used incense. If it was outdoors, I probably would have put on a shitload more, because it's outdoors. You know what I mean? It was an indoor ritual, so it was freezing. But, yeah, and we weren't even allowed to have candles at the time because of the insurance or something on the room. So I was using battery-operated tea lights. Like, I was working under constraints, okay? Please.
You're lucky you felt the power at all.
Right? Feel my power. So I was like, are we even allowed to burn incense? Because it's burning, you know what I mean? Mm. Not that I don't think incense has ever caused a fire. But just, like, the sticks of incense, like, I don't think that'll ever cause a fire. But, yeah, so I was working under a lot of constraints. There was a lot of constraints. Also, budget. I didn't have a huge budget, because, you know, basically it was kind of like, if you're doing this ritual, you're kind of footing the bill for it. Like, and you can submit, I think, for a refund or something. I don't even know if I even got any money back from it. And I didn't really care. It was fine. I was okay with it.
Yeah.
Because I wanted to do the ritual.
You were very excited about it.
I was super excited about it. And I was excited about it up until I had access to that Google Doc and I read it. And I was like, wow, like, those are the things that you chose to nitpick on.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, the whole reveal of the... Like, that was my thing, was the reveal of the goddess from underneath the snows of winter. I thought that was fucking great.
I almost regret not going to that.
And the people who were there, they said that was the best part. So I got what I wanted from the attendees, but I think it was like the committee or the board. I was just
that's why I don't like power structures.
Right.
I've never been one. I've never really enjoyed it very much. I think that witchcraft should, even in circle, even in a coven, should still be giving the spiritual autonomy to each and every practitioner. And, you know, if someone becomes possessed by a deity, they should have the right to, whether they are the priest or priestess or magister, whatever, magisterless, whatever you want to call it. I think that they have the right to, and that's why formal covens have always also rubbed me the wrong way. They're just not, like, for instance, like, the idea of battery-operated candles grinds my
Oh, yeah. I mean, none of us were happy about it. No one was happy about it. But it was just, it was a constraint because of the space that we were renting.
Right. From. I mean, that's not, as, I mean, but, right. Yeah. But even that still would absolutely grind all of the gears.
it really bugged me. Now, see, I wouldn't mind using battery-operated candles just for ambient light.
Well, that's fine.
Just for ambient light, that would be fine, but I literally had to use battery-operated candles for the corners and for the source candle. Like, we were not allowed to have fire.
At all.
No flame.
Oh, remember when they
did
that?
I think I was pushing it with the incense.
Remember when they were doing, I remember this anyway, with the, they did a cauldron full of Florida water. They lit it on fire.
Yeah, we were there for that. Yeah, did you go to Samhain with me?
They did it a different ritual. I was there.
Yeah, but they often did that. They would literally set a cauldron on fire. Well, not like on fire, but you know what I mean? Like
inside. They didn't light iron and all of a sudden.
No, I just I remember the first ritual I went there was Samhain one of the years. And the woman that was Hecate was awesome. She was amazing. Scared the balls off me, and you know, who calls me, and then this flame, and I was like, oh fuck, yeah. I fucked up, like, you know what I mean, you're like, oh damn, like, she was not herself, she was Hecate, as far as I'm concerned, she was Hecate, like, mm-hmm. in that moment, aspecting her 1,000,000%, because she was like, who calls me, and like, no one, like, answered, she was like, I said, who calls me, and I was like, oh, he did it, not me. Yeah, and they were, like, whooshing, and I don't know. Maybe it was all the whooshing. Maybe we got in trouble. I don't know what the specifics were, but there were very annoying constraints. It also felt a little like maybe we were being a little discriminated against. It was a Quaker church that we rented space from.
Yeah.
And the Quakers are pretty cool.
They are. They're very, very inclusive.
Yeah, but I think what they said it had more to do with because the church was, like, hundreds of years old. I know something with the insurance and fire code.
Yeah, that church. I mean, I really did love
it. Like, if the place gets bombed, I loved it. I would live in there. I would convert that into an apartment. I loved it. Like, the fireplace and the...
That place has some other guests, too.
Oh, yeah. And then the cemetery right there. Oh, my God. We were never allowed in the cemetery, though, which makes sense.
Really? Yeah. I always wanted to just walk in the cemetery.
But we could walk in there. We weren't allowed to have ritual in there. It makes sense, though.
Well, it's not, yeah.
Yeah.
Boo.
Side eye. I'm just going to open a cemetery and just, like, let witches, like, rent it.
Summon all the dead people.
Do your thing. So that's one experience I had with writing and creating a ritual for the public. I learned a lot. I learned that don't let the critics get you down. Don't let the board or the committee or the whatever power structure is in place play by their rules within reason.
And even those kind of rules, personally, I would challenge.
Because there was one person who did stick up for me about my ritual attire. Well, there's two people. You know, it was like, well, the colors were very appropriate. You know, I wasn't... out as trans at the time, so actually someone said, you know, they identify as male, actually, I just want you to know, because I was out to them, you know, it was like coming out.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, I guess it makes more sense, but the one person was just, like, insufferable, they were like, well, couldn't have loaned them a robe or something, or a cloak, and I'm like, listen, lady. I was wearing green and tan, okay? Spring ritual. Blow me.
I mean, even if, like, okay, then why didn't you just offer? Why did you have to ask?
Right, why did you have to, like, watch and suffer through my entire ritual, you know?
That word wasn't used, was it?
No, it wasn't.
Oh, but, my God. Like, I would be like, way, oh, I'm going online right now.
The way it came across was, like, I had to endure watching you not be ritually. And the other thing I got was, it was very Wiccan. And the reason why I made it very Wiccan is because the majority of the people that attended that are Wiccan. And modern-day Wicca is very palatable.
Yeah.
You know, it's very it's very nice. It makes it's very nice to feel. I wasn't gonna have some like let's summon the dead and like slaughter a pig and then the Quaker not that church. We would not that we would. You know what I mean? Like I'm not going like all out
can
like
I,
that.
I also just real quick, and I think about this often with our podcast.
Yeah.
I just want to give this to everybody. I'm going to look directly at the camera for this. We are very critical. When we say Wicca the way Jay just did, it is not all Wicca. Mm-mm. It is not Wicca indefinitely, full stop. It's commercialized stop. Wicca. It's, right, commercialized Wicca. It is, yeah, it's the New Age, the
Walmart Wicca.
The, yeah, the Mick Wicca, yeah. Whatever you want to call it. We're not insulting all Wiccans. We're not, you know, we're not even insulting the theology of Wiccans. I might not always agree with it, mm-hmm. but I just want you to understand there's a certain group of Wicca that we're talking about. Yeah. It's almost, technically speaking, not even...
Wiccans that are actually true Wiccans, we have no problem with. It's just Wiccans that... It's like saying you're Wiccan, but, like, you don't... You're saying you're Wiccan,
you don't put
still...
anything into it. It's exactly. Like what we were talking about last show.
Yeah. Like, if like you're so
if you're if you're a Wiccan or if you're a witch or you're a pagan or if you're whatever, we believe here on Witches Betwixt that title you only earn it by doing the work.
Yes.
And if you are, in my opinion, you know, there are just certain things that are not witchcraft. Witchcraft inspired, maybe. Maybe historically inspired by, but they themselves are not witchcraft. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't want to go into that right now. I just wanted to preface that. I'm sorry to derail a little bit, but I just, yeah, no. I think about it often, and it bothers me a little, and I feel really guilty, and I just wanted you to know that if you are Wiccan, I do love you, mm-hmm. and you're appreciated, mm-hmm. and welcome. I just don't want you to feel marginalized, mm-hmm. or, you know, I know we're a little bit more critical. But you have to understand what we're actually being critical of. I just don't want... I understood that maybe we weren't always as clear.
Yeah.
So,
I
that
guess
is all.
I guess it's the narrow-minded Wiccans.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm sorry to derail it.
No, that's totally fine. So anyway, so I had designed the ritual to be more Wiccan. Because the majority of people were Wiccan.
Mm-hmm.
That was, you know, like... The whole, like, love and light thing was pretty much the theme. And I get it. It's for a public group. We had some people that were there for the first time. We had college kids that were there because, you know, they, for, like a school project or something, they're like, they had to, like, attend a religious ceremony that wasn't of their own faith. So
I actually think I might have known them. I had a friend contact me.
Yeah.
Around that same time. So when you told me that, I actually, that might have
been them.
Yeah, I didn't know the whole group. I just knew the one person.
Yeah, so, yeah, I mean, so I had designed it that way, and then, you know, the person was like, oh, well, it was very Wiccan, and I'm not a Wiccan, and I felt like,
what person
know,
there is not, and especially in particular that group?
I'll tell you later specifically who it is.
Okay, I can't wait for that one so I can rant.
no shade, maybe a little shade. But anyway, it was just, it was this idea of like, well, I am personally not this thing, and therefore, it should have been different. Okay, well, listen here, honey. You, do the next one. Do a whatever-themed ritual.
But you want to know something? And I think it's interesting that you're saying this, because I think one of the things that we learned by writing for a small group,
yes,
is that that, even of itself, doesn't always work either.
No, it doesn't always work.
Because when you, we, the coven that we're forming, the kind of reimagining of the original coven, you know, for instance, even just our quarter calls, for instance, are completely different,
yes,
from what our, the coven had wanted.
Mm-hmm.
And even then it was a little bit maybe darker or, maybe a little bit more wordy was the thing. Yeah, wordy, excuse me.
We're more verbose in our writing of rituals. We pull from texts that are not as well known. We pull from, like, smaller authors that write, like, more niche kind of topics related to witchcraft and paganism.
Yeah.
We pull from those sources as opposed to pulling you know, just from, like, Cunningham and Buckland, which, nothing wrong with those guys. No. It's just we've kind of moved on. We've moved away from that. So, yeah, I mean, I think that's, like, the best way to describe it is we're, like, when... If we're doing ritual, it better be at least an hour long. At least.
Mm.
If not more.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't want the... we don't like the quick, like, okay, call no. the quarters... Goddess, circle, ritual, done.
No, which that was the thing that we did have to do for
Covet. We did have to change.
We had to speed it up more.
Yeah.
Which did always bother me just because I want to be in the moment. Like, one of the things that I do, not just in my own practice, but, you know, I talked about this a lot with you.
Mm-hmm.
When I call the quarters, when I call the elements into space, I like to spend time with them.
Yes, it's not just like... Powers of the North. Power of the... It's not like a...
I like to stand there. And I like to get a visualization going. And I like to call them up. And I like to spend... After I do it, I like to spend a few moments with that.
I think our group was uncomfortable with the spaces in between.
Yeah.
The quiet spaces.
Well, because the thing is, I suppose, the problem was is that, you know... I guess it really comes down to teaching them what do you do with those spaces in between.
Yeah.
They didn't know what to do
you
with that.
You have to maintain that energy. Like, there's not always sound in a ritual.
I think a lot of the time, you know, especially with beginners, and I don't just want to talk about our coven members, I want to talk about, you know, in general, people who don't necessarily know what to do
mm-hmm.
are going... Right. The thing is that they have to... You have to make sure that everybody is on the same page.
Mm-hmm.
Not necessarily on the same level of practice, whatever that means, but on the same page in the sense of make sure that they know when we're spending a moment with the element that we conjured here, we're sort of within that. We're letting it sort of envelop us, and we are spending time inside of that element. And we're just maybe, you know, whether you see it as an entity or... just an energy, whatever, you're spending time with it. And if you see it as an entity, maybe you're communing with it. Maybe you're saying, you know, you're saying what you're about to say out loud. So you're saying, you know, Spirit of Earth, you know, I called you here. Can you, you know, guard and watch over this rite?
Mm-hmm.
Then you say it out loud for the whole coven and everyone affirms it. And then you move on.
Mm-hmm.
See what I'm getting at?
Mm-hmm.
And I think the problem is that people don't know to visualize. And it's funny because the way that I learned this was from a book. I realized this from a book.
Hmm.
I have this book called Craft of the Untamed. It's an amazing book of traditional craft. And he talks about a ritual that we are using to redo our coven.
Hmm.
In which feeding the witches of the land, which is feeding the mighty dead or the witches who've gone before us.
Hmm.
And in it, he reminds you, which I love, that when you are conjuring things or when you're doing magic, you have to make sure you're maintaining visualization. You have to know and see the outcome.
Mm-hmm.
And he tells you to visualize the spirits of the witches coming up out of the earth.
Mm-hmm.
And I love that he did that because not many people will do that in their books. They don't remind you to maintain visualization.
No, they just say, you know...
Here's how to visualize. And
here's
they break
how
it
to visualize. Here's what you say. Here's what you do.
They kind of tell you, though, like, you should be doing this.
Yeah.
But he mentions it in the middle of, like, the spell. Like
yeah.
the description.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? The actual, like, how-to part of the spell.
Yeah. I mean, it's just like when I was talking about, like, take something simple like circle casting.
Mm-hmm.
I always go back to this because, I mean, I've seen a lot in practice. Like, I don't know what people visualize when they cast circles. Because most books that I've read, it's just cast a circle or a white light or a globe or a white globe. It's usually like a white light sort of symbolism or visualization that they give. You know, and you're taking your sword or dagger or whatever and, you know, or that. And it's, you know, white light. Like a line of white light or a globe of white light. For me, it was never white light. It was like, light isn't going to do anything for me. So when I cast a circle, I honestly don't cast a circle with a dagger or a sword or anything like that. I visualize that I am reaching into the ground, and I am pulling out these old dead tree roots, and I am fashioning them around the ritual space in like a hut.
Right.
Like a dome. That's my circle.
I always like the concept. For me, it's always, like, personally, it's the compass.
Mm-hmm.
So I like the concept of, like, you kind of, like, in Western ceremonial magic, they might consider it, like, the middle pillar,
mm-hmm.
Where you kind of inadvertently, spiritually become the center of the universe. You become,
mm-hmm.
like, the access point. And for one thing, like, there's another author, Peter Padden, who discussed... you visualize yourself going down into the underworld as you cast a circle for a traditional witch.
Mm-hmm. Sort of like leaving this physical realm.
And like he discussed that, like, for instance, like with there's a less known circle casting, which is called the Hobbed Step. We've discussed
it
before.
It, yeah.
And the Hobbed Step is literally as it sounds. You kind of like zombie-like drag your foot around. And you visualize as you're going, you might hiss, some people hiss.
Mm-hmm.
And you visualize yourself, like, sort of creating, like, a trench to the underworld.
And it's things like that, like the hop step, like, it, you have to, so, that would be really great for, like, a Samhain ritual.
I think that would be lovely for a Samhain ritual.
Right.
And, you know, just the act of doing that, you know, yeah, it just seems...
Exactly.
It has
so,
an air about
if
it.
Suppose you know we had the original coven, right? Suppose we would like write that into the ritual, like we're going to do the Hobbs step.
They didn't like it.
I don't think it would be well received because it's very much like an ecstatic form of witchcraft, and also it's if you look at it from an outside perspective, like, look at it from someone who knows nothing about witchcraft, like, that is utterly ridiculous and hilarious, and you guys are weird as shit.
Yeah.
And I'm going to stay far away from that. So I think the original coven, I think they would have like, tried, like, given it a fair shake, but there would have been some giggles.
And it wouldn't have done what it needed to
and
do.
And it wouldn't have done what it needed to do. Whereas me and you, we get it. We can get into it, because we're very much into the ecstatic practice.
Mm-hmm.
And also, like, someone who is very ceremonial about their, you know, about their circle casting really might not jive
with
that. Like,
yeah,
that.
They might need to have
their sword, their dagger, their
wand,
you know, whatever it is. That might be the only way that they can really cast that circle, and that's fine. But when you're creating a ritual for a group, you have to be mindful of that. You have to be mindful of, like, well, the hop step is perfect for Samhain. Absolutely, 100%. Throw it in. We're going to do it. And then it's like, why is the circle casting going terribly? Because everyone's giggling, or no one gets it, or
no one can raise the energy and visualize it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then you kind of just, like, you reach a point where you're like, okay, well, we got to move on with the ritual. And then you're like, I feel like our circle is shaky,
and I feel
like the energy's not there.
Right. And I feel like this kind of really leads into, a lot of the time, realistically, you have to find a group of people. I guess this is another one of those things.
Mm-hmm.
You have to find a group of people that are like-minded.
Yes, that you really jive with.
I kind of liken it. I know this, you know, this is just a personal experience, but if you've ever had to find a therapist who works for you. You know, it's not that the other therapists were bad. They just, your personalities
just
were different.
Doctors in general.
Doctors in general.
Like a primary doctor.
Yeah.
You know, it's like.
Oh, that's very true.
Yeah, you know, you don't want someone that's, like, judging you about
right.
everything you do. You're like, yeah, I have a beer on the weekend. You know, and they're like, oh, well, you shouldn't. You know, you want someone who jives with what you
yeah,
are into.
Yeah, who you are, right.
Yeah.
And I think that plays a big part. So a lot of the time, when you're either, whether you're creating rituals for large groups or whether you're creating rituals for small groups, they're both, one of the things that always kind of comes together is, although for an open group, like the one you're writing ritual for, I feel that as though the people that are going to be attracted to that are people who are still trying to find their way,
yeah.
or people who are Wiccan.
Yeah. Because most of their rituals are very Wiccan.
Yeah. I mean, in very outer court Wicca.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, it, you know, understanding, not just for the person writing it, who has to understand the audience, if you will, the participants, but also the participants need to also understand, is this who I am? Is this what I want? Mm-hmm. Is this how I magic? Is this how I view this? Should I look? And the thing is, you know, looking for groups is hard enough, especially with, you know, and it's you know, interestingly enough, witchcraft is on the rise. Once again, we dropped off for a while.
Yeah.
And then we're like, we picked up with steam.
I think our political climate has a lot to do with that.
I do too. Everybody needs witchcraft.
Particularly in America. I can't really speak for
Yeah. In America, we're really doing the witch thing.
Mm-hmm.
So
I also have an experience with public ritual from the opposite perspective. So I did not, I didn't design the ritual. Pagan Pride Day rituals.
Mm-hmm.
They're very, I mean, the whole point of Pagan Pride Day happens after, is it Labor Day? That's at the end of the summer?
Yeah.
Memorial Day is in the
beginning. Yeah, because that's why we don't go back to school. Like, people don't go back to school, like, the September 1st. They wait because of the holiday.
Okay, so, yeah. So, it's usually Labor Day weekend. So, I think it's this year. It's, like, September 1st. Yeah. So, that's traditional harvest time.
Mm-hmm.
If we're going back to, you know, our farming ancestors. European farming ancestors. That's our, you know, in the Northern Hemisphere, that's harvest time. So
we're coming up to the autumnal equinox.
Yes. Like summer's waning. It's usually hot as balls still in September, but whatever. Global warming's not real. Remember that. there's food. They do food donations. You know, they have like the hay stacks. So it's very like autumny. You know.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very focused on thanking the land, the spirits of the land, blessing the things that we have, the seeds that we have sown throughout the year. It's that idea of harvesting all of these things, but not just food in general, but just like it's sort of like a harvest festival.
Yeah, it is.
In addition to it being pagan pride,
it is
they
sort of
theme it.
Mm-hmm.
But the main group. And I am, I'm on the board this year, I'm the vendor coordinator, and I was last year. But the main group behind that are heathens.
Yeah, they are Nordic
pagans,
yeah.
So very Germanic, I think, what is Rob? Like, he mostly focuses on, like, Pennsylvania Dutch
mm-hmm.
tradition.
Well, that's the kind of magic he practices. He practices Brouwerij or powwow, which is the folk magic of the Dutch. But he himself is like Germanic pagan, which
mm-hmm.
pretty much goes, which is hand in hand.
Yeah, so they're the heathens group, and you know that's you know I know the term heathen comes with its own set of just like pagan comes with its own set of like oh pagan or heathen, but they call themselves heathens. That's their proper name.
Mm-hmm.
And I noticed, so, because it's, they're heathens, the rituals are very heathen-themed.
They are.
They're very, which...
I like.
At first, I was like, well, this is weird, because I was so used to public ritual being super Wiccan, you know, because I feel like Wiccans are predominant, like the predominant group. Within the whole witchcraft sort of...
Yeah, they definitely are...
Or at least they're the face of it.
I would agree.
So I was honestly expecting these rituals to be very very Wiccan in nature, and then I was like, oh, wait, but these guys are heathens. And they have the... Is it called sickle? Sickle? And yeah, sickle, and I was like, oh, that's cool.
To represent Hela.
Yeah, and all the, you know, all these, they're very specific with their use of their gods and goddesses' names, like, they're very intentional, they use the runes, and, you know, like, the meanings behind
mm-hmm.
each of these runes, there's not traditional quarter calls, necessarily, it's not Wiccan at all,
mm-hmm.
and it's kind of like, it gave me like a moment of like giggling. They say hail a lot. And they were just, hail this, hail Thor, hail the community. Mm-hmm. That's what it was last year. So yeah. The protesters. It was, hail the community, hail the community.
Oh, man, and I still have to gird myself for that. I know they'll be back.
Yeah. That's a whole other topic. But it was like, hail the community and hail Thor and hail, and I know, like, some Marvel and stuff. Like, people giggle, like, hail Thor. But, like, Thor's a real god. But yeah, I was totally jarred by that. I was like, oh my god, it's not Wiccan. But I also really like that, too.
I am really happy because when it first started,
that go there don't like that it's not Wiccan.
Are you serious?
Yeah. There's like, I feel a lot of people are like, oh, like, the original was okay. It was like different. Like, it was different. You mean, yeah, it was different because it wasn't Wiccan. It wasn't a Wiccan themed.
When I first started going, I remember the focus, and I'm really glad they did this. And me and Sarah, you remember my friend Sarah. My friend Sarah was on the board, the first, like, she was
one
OG. Yeah, she was one of the originators, and unfortunately she's passed away, but we discussed this a lot, how we were also, we wanted something different.
Yeah.
I mean, I wasn't on the board, but she would talk to me about a lot of stuff, as you do, oddly enough.
Yeah.
And, you know, at first they were trying to make the ritual inclusive. They were trying to, instead of like just focusing on Nordic, whatever, they were trying to kind of make it so everybody kind of felt themselves. But the problem was, is that you don't, when you try to do that, when you try to put too many,
it gets dicey.
The energy doesn't work. You can't do that. You have to work within traditions because that's the things that those spirits of those traditions understand. And they're not going to respond to things that they don't.
Yeah.
And I love that can I name people? Because I know their names. Is that okay? With Pagan Friday?
Well, I said Rob.
Oh, yeah, Rob was who I was talking about. I didn't know if he said his name.
He's the president of Rob.
Yeah, Rob.
I don't know how to pronounce his last name, though.
I don't know either. Well, his name's Rob. And I love that Rob, being, you know, the kind of personality that he has, is kind of like, you know what? It's Nordic.
Yeah.
You know, I run this show.
Yeah,
and
it's,
guess what?
It's his circus. He can do what he wants.
And I kind of like that he did that.
Yeah.
Because I love the fact that we talk about land whites and things like that. And we're talking about land spirits. And, you know, I like that we did that just because it's not something you really see.
And also last year at the protesters, he was really fired up. And so,
he got very upset, but so did I.
Oh, yeah. I mean, a lot of people got really fired up over it, and he was very fired up. And I feel like the closing ritual was supposed to be something else. Like, it was supposed to be maybe more, like, tame and everything. But it got intense because it was also raining. And it was, like, not... It put a damper on things, like the protesters. But also, like, it was raining. And a lot of vendors were upset because it was raining and this and that. And it just felt like everything toward the end of the event was going a little wrong. And then Rob kind of... I remember he took charge of that final ritual and was like, no, this is what we're doing. We're taking ourselves back. We're retaking our power here.
Yeah.
You know, and that's when, like, you know, like, hail the community. Like, I just remember hearing that, hail the community. And it was this small group of people, because everyone starts to, like, fizzle out, you know. It was a small group of people that were left, and it started pouring.
Remember the circle, though? Like, during that, like, it filled up. Like, I don't think I've ever seen the circle.
Yeah.
Maybe except for, like, opening ritual, which I've never actually been there for, because I like to sleep.
Only,
but I can't
time.
This year, because I have to read there this year.
Yeah.
I have to be up.
So, yeah, I mean, I just remember him, like, taking charge of that, and I thought it was great. I thought it was a great public ritual. I think in that moment, I don't think anyone particularly cared whether it was heathen
or
Wiccan or
like
whatever.
Rob said in that moment, people needed...
to reclaim themselves.
That, and we needed to have the sense of community again.
Mm-hmm.
Because when people do that type of stuff, when they come for you in that way,
mm-hmm.
you feel scattered and you feel lonely and you feel attacked. And it helps to know that you're not alone.
Like, we're all there for that specific purpose
mm-hmm.
and reason. So I thought that was great. So those are just two experiences that I have in terms of public ritual.
Yeah.
They're very difficult to navigate. I don't wish it on anyone to have to write one for a general populace, because it's a difficult task. It's a very difficult, trying task. Mm. Also, if you are in a coven and you are writing for a coven, and we kind of said this in the last episode, make sure you and your coven are on the same page. For sure. You know, do you want things that are wordy? Do you like things that are wordy? Do you want to go back to Old English? Like, what do you want in your ritual? And you really have to think about that.
And everyone has to agree.
Yes. And, you know, can you please some people? Yeah. You can make it very palatable for the group. It is possible.
Mm-hmm.
But there also is a give-and-take relationship between mm-hmm. the ritual writer / leader of that ritual and the group. So, you know, like, you... Like, I feel like there are even some things that are a little give-and-take with us. You'd be like, I want to put this in there, and I just really want to do it. And I'll be like, it seems a little over the top, but okay, yeah, sure, let's
do it.
Yeah,
you
do
a lot with me.
Yeah.
But that's... I do that. I'm prone to flights of fancy.
Exactly. And I'm like, you know what? Okay, fine. You know? And I'm willing to... That's my give.
But then there are times,
scenario.
Too, there are a lot of times where I realize what you're saying. You
mm-hmm.
you do that thing where you, like... You realize that I'm prone to those flights of fancy, and you pacify me with kind words, and you're kind of like, well, look at it this way.
Yeah.
And you're very gentle about it, and I always appreciate that.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and I'm like, oh, no, you're right. And I, you
especially
know.
When it came to writing for the group. Now, writing for the two of us, I mean, our rituals could be 3 hours long, and I really would not care.
Yeah.
Either way, you can put whatever you want in there. But another, it's a really small sort of thing. To touch on is that if you're writing for a group of people that are queer identifying, be careful about your use of language. Because, such as, like for, if you're writing for a group of queer people, they might not feel comfortable with subscribing to the gender binary. So you have to be really careful of how are you using God and goddess figures? Are you using them in their stereotypical senses? You know what I mean? Like, are you, you know, the goddesses are love and light and beauty, and the men are strong, and, you know,
warriors.
Like, they may not agree with that. There are war goddesses. They're real.
There are moon gods.
There are moon gods. Exactly. They're also real. So, It's important to be very mindful of the group of people that you're writing for, because there is one thing that always stands out in my mind is that when I would do rituals at my friend's house in West Philly, there was a woman, she's a lesbian, so she was very, very, like, female-oriented, sort of, like, in her... I don't think she was Dianic, but I would say, like, a lot more girl power than your average, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Like, for Cakes and Ale, at the end of the ritual, you know, to the gods. And she would... And you would hear, and the goddesses. She would add that in.
Right.
So, like, but she wouldn't be, like, doing the offering. Like, you know, they'd be doing the offering to the gods and the goddesses. And you would hear that from her, like, underneath her breath. And I was like, man, this... They really should just put that in there. Like, I get what... Like, I thought it was, like, a little ridiculous because gods is plural. Like, it stands for all the gods.
That's the thing. See, I guess this is where, like, that bitchy me comes out in. Because
mm-hmm.
for me, it's kind of like, stop because you know what we're saying.
Right, but I did notice that the guy who was hosting the rituals, he picked up on that, because she kept coming in the rituals, and he picked up on that, she felt like that particular thing was lacking, and so he started saying it to the gods and the goddesses. And I thought that was just really nice, and it was like a show of compassion.
Respect
and
compassion.
Respect.
I get it.
I thought that was cool.
It's nice. I mean, I appreciate that he adopted it.
Mm-hmm. But don't feel that you have to. Like, he didn't have to. You know what I mean? Because
no, I mean,
take ownership of your ritual. And that's the other thing, is that I think that's something that me and you kind of backpedaled on. Take ownership of your ritual. Don't be an asshole about it. But also, you have to find a line where you're like, no, this is the ritual. This is how I wrote it. This is how it's going to go.
Right.
But you have... It's a very
these are very
delicate balance.
Slippery slopes. I don't even think that there's actually...
There's no right or wrong way.
There's no right or wrong way. You know, like, personally, for instance, to use your story that you just said, I would have rather have talked to her privately and told her we're using to the gods as plural.
Mm-hmm.
You know, to, you know, all the powers that be,
mm-hmm.
that which are divinity.
Mm-hmm.
I would have probably personally have done that.
Mm-hmm.
Not as like an anti-feminist anything, just as like, I don't want things to feel forced.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I feel as though if he had his ritual written that way, I would have understood, you know, a lot, and if I'm not mistaken, the person running the ritual is also queer himself.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. And it's not that, you know, like, it's not a nice gesture that he added it, but at the same time, he added it out of feeling bad, out of compassion,
I know
what I'm saying?
I can see how it could be taken both ways. I just thought it was nice.
It was, very. I'm not trying to discredit the compassion, obviously. But
at the same time, I feel like in the sense of saying to the gods, I think that was honestly just tradition and habit because of his tradition and his coven that he was in. I think that's all it was. So I think for him, he was okay with being like, okay, I'm the goddesses. Like, why? Who cares?
Right.
I think it was, like, one of those situations. Now, if it was, like, you know, this is a very super Wiccan ritual, and this is how we're doing it, and everything is thus and so, like, to the gods.
You know what it is for me, too, though? It's that I do something that not a lot of people do. When I worked at Harry's Occult Shop, I was around a lot of voodoo saints. So I was around a lot of practitioners of Afro-Caribbean ATRs. Etc. And the Loa and the Orisha are not, I mean, people will call them gods, but technically speaking, they're spirits
right.
allocated by, you know, God. So for me, I use that because I love that idea. I like that, you know, I basically use the word spirits and gods almost interchangeably sometimes, and I've confused people.
Yeah, you do.
But that's just because of growing up in a hoodoo supply shop, you know, and reading there at 19 years old, I was picking up on that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one of the people who was really kind to me there was a voodoo priestess. You know what I'm saying? So like, it was, or Mambo, to be precise. So, you know, I get what you're saying. It's definitely language learned. Mm-hmm. And, like, but the thing is that spirits is gender neutral.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like,
mm-hmm.
So for me, saying the gods, I know I'm talking about.
Well, I think what it might, maybe it's a bit of a feminist thing in the sense of, like, we often attribute male words to a collective of people. Like, hey, guys.
Right. Yeah.
Like, I'm pretty sure I haven't said it. Like, in the beginning of the podcast, I say, hey, everyone. I don't think I've said guys.
No, you've never said guys.
Yeah. Because also most, like, YouTube people are like, hey, guys. What's up, guys? No, I hate that. But yeah, it's just like, hey, everyone. That's a gender neutral sort of thing.
Oh. Oh, man. Showing my ignorance. I don't like it.
Oh no. That sort of came up when I was an RA in college. We did like RA training like 2 weeks before. And that was one of our things. It was like about sort of women being erased in a male in a male space, which is funny that that was even a thing, because the majority of the people that went to that school were women. Like, men were a rarity at that school. There's not a lot of guys there.
I don't know. I guess my whole thing is that...
But I do agree that gods is... I personally feel like the word, like, to the gods is a gender-neutral expression.
I guess when it comes to things like, you know, like, for instance, I live in South Philly. Mm-hmm. One of our favorite phrases is, use guys.
Use guys.
Use guys. Mm-hmm. Use guys is everybody.
Mm-hmm. Or dude.
Dude. I don't say dude, but...
I say dude.
You say it's dude a lot. Problem. Yeah. Which is fine.
Yeah.
I remember you got into a fight.
I did.
Online.
Get into a fight online about that.
Yeah. With other trans people.
With trans women.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I suppose... I just feel like those words don't... We use those phrases, and I feel personally like they're harmless.
Mm.
That might be a little bit selfish, but... I was raised on it. You're probably not going to get that. I'm fine with pronouns.
Mm-hmm.
And everything else, but as far as saying, like, guys and things like that...
Well, I think it's also, I think a lot more people now, especially queer people, are very sensitive about language. But I feel like it depends on the culture that you grew up in. So here in Philly, for me to say, like you say to me, like, suppose I'm, like wearing something that looks nice. You'd be like, girl, you look great.
Yeah.
I would not be offended by that.
Right, because I do that.
Right. You're like, yes, girl.
Yeah.
Like, okay, fine. But, and then a lot of people would even backpedal that to say that, like, you're appropriating black culture. Because that's where that comes from. I don't know the origination of Yas Queen or Yas Girl. I don't know.
Yeah.
All I know is that I attribute it to, like, gay culture, like, gay male culture.
Which, I mean, it's how it, yeah.
But it, I guess it filters its way down. I don't know. All my friends are like, Yas Queen, Yas Girl. Like, we all say it, but it's, like, it's a positive thing. It's not,
yeah.
Like, I'm calling you a girl, ha, 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 I think you are female. It has nothing to do with
No,
that.
It has nothing to do with gender at all.
It really doesn't. It's just, like, you look fabulous. And, like, yeah, you could just say you look fabulous, but there's just something about, like, someone calling you a queen.
Plus,
it just
I say
weird.
It's a joke. I say
exactly.
It...
Like, it's a joke. But some people...
What is that word you say it to be... There's a word for that. When, like, you're using a phrase... To
ironically?
Be funny.
Ironically.
Yeah.
I guess,
I'm using
yeah.
it ironically. Mm-hmm.
I guess, yeah. So, yeah, I mean, I think, you know, it just comes down to that. And, like, I did get into a whole big fucking argument about use of the word dude and then, you know, all sorts of
shit. I remember
of
that. That was crazy.
That was not a fun experience. But, yeah, so just be mindful of the language that you're using. Is the group of people like us to where, like, it doesn't really matter? You know what I mean? You could use very gendered language, and I'd be okay with it. It really would not bother me if you wrote a ritual.
I don't see the spirits like that anyway, so I get what you're saying. You're speaking hypothetically.
Yeah, hypothetically.
But I mean, I don't see them as gendered beings anymore.
Right. So, like, or I could just partake in a ritual where it was, like, you know...
I could.
You know, all the...
I could.
It would be fine. I would not feel personally attacked or offended.
I would also maybe say this, too, that maybe I'm speaking too generally on my own beliefs, just because I look at the spirit world the same way I look at this one.
Mm-hmm.
There are trans people and there are cis people.
Mm-hmm.
There are probably gods who don't mind... Maybe gender neutral, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really know their minds, but, you know, like, maybe there are some deities who, you know what I'm saying?
Or where gender is, like, not even a factor. Like, it's
or maybe,
not
right.
Issue.
I don't, well, of course, I don't know any of that.
Yeah.
But I'm just saying that the chances, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah. Very true. So, in terms of, you know, in having queer inclusivity in your rituals, it really
mm-hmm.
comes down to language. How you're using your god and goddess figures, if you're using them at all. You could just resort to just using, you know, the universe, the cosmos, like, that
or
sort of idea.
Goddess, god herself, goddess himself?
Yeah, we did come up with that. I did like that.
Well, goddess, god herself was
god herself
Fairy,
from
Anderson Fairy.
Fairy. Yeah. And I sort of expanded on it a bit.
Mm-hmm.
So we used to say in our coven rituals, and I still like it. I mean, I would still keep it.
Oh, I like it. There's nothing wrong with it.
So God herself comes from the fairy tradition. But then I added, I said God herself, goddess himself, may they walk this path with us.
Mm-hmm.
It was a very, like, neutral way to just introduce and talk about all the gods and all the goddesses and all the ones that are this and that. And it was just a really nice way to sort of just introduce all that. And, yeah, you can use it if you want in your own rituals. You heard it here. if you're designing a ritual for the public, you cannot please everyone. Please don't try. It's literally impossible. You will go insane trying.
And also, everyone, whether you were designing the ritual or not, being honest with yourself is the probably the most crucial thing, because if you are not going to like it, don't write it. If you are not going to like it, don't attend it. It is not, you're not being mean, you're not being rude, you're not being inconsiderate. You know what you want, you know what you need for your spiritual practice. If that is not for you, don't do it. Respect it, always be respectful, but just don't do it. Just because then energy can't flow. You have to remember, magic is also part science. When we get together, it's not just about calling on deities, it's also about calling up power, and that power has to be able to move between everyone in attendance.
Yes.
And if you're not really feeling it, you're not gonna add to the magic, and the magic is basically the energy will not raise the way it needs to make anything happen.
Yeah. Own your ritual. Be mindful, be respectful, be compassionate to all the people that are going to be attending. However, own it. Don't make too many sacrifices to where it's not even your ritual anymore.
Well, because writing a ritual is a creative act. It is a magical, creative act.
It's also an extension of yourself.
Yeah.
It's important to
yourself. I mean, well, as art is.
Yeah.
Exactly. It is an art form. Writing rituals is an art form.
Not everyone can write a ritual.
I've met many people who say, I don't know how you do it.
And there's also no shame in using a pre-written ritual that someone else has made.
There's not.
There is no shame
in
that.
There's not in that at all.
There's no shame in that at all whatsoever. So, and then, you know, with the queer inclusivity, it's mostly about language.
And
language
also
choice.
About communication. I mean, all of this can really come down to communication, but mm-hmm. make sure you're talking to each other. Make sure everyone's communicating at least as best as possible.
Yep.
I mean, public rituals might be a little bit more difficult, maybe, but nevertheless, making sure you're talking maybe before ritual about, you know, language use, about intention of language, comfortability, etc. Make sure you are communicating.
Absolutely.
And being honest.
Yep. So I think that kind of wraps up our conversation on creating group rituals.
I think it does too.
Yeah. Just a couple things, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, we're on all those things. I'm pressuring him to make a Twitter account.
Which I'm doing. I'm doing after this.
You can find the podcast on YouTube, Buzzsprout, Spotify, and Google Play Music. Still trying to figure out iTunes. Still working on subtitles. I'm going to have to educate you on lots of technical things. You're about to do some work today.
Okay.
You're gonna learn today.
Oh God, I'm scared.
and we are putting up Patreon.
Yes, there is a Patreon.
Soon. Which I'll put a link to on social media if it's not up by the time this podcast is posted.
Should we tell them about my idea about the Patreon? I think they might enjoy that.
Okay, yeah, sure.
We are going to have, so far there's three tiers, but the third tier, I think some of you might enjoy, will be a three-card reading with yours truly, yours truly.
A monthly, so once a month.
Emmy?
I forget how much that tier was, though. I don't remember the price.
Didn't we say five? Or was it four? Five or four?
I don't remember.
Something like that.
Yeah, something like that. It's up there. The $1 tier is like, thank you so much. The $3 tier is, we'll read your name before the podcast and also display your name on the YouTube version as well. And the $5, I think it was $5, you get a 3-card reading once a month from this guy.
Hey.
So that is pretty cool. Yeah, I think that's everything in terms of, like, that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Also, my little outro, little voiceover thing will probably be playing at the end of this for Witchwise. But just as a plug myself again, remember if you ever have you or someone you know need a reading, Witchwise, Seer and Witch on Facebook.
He's the guy.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, until then, we will see you guys in the next episode.
Bye. Hello, everyone. Scott here. I've been reading tarot for over 10 years. I am an intuitive reader, and through my readings, I try to give guidance to aid my clients in navigating their lives. To schedule a reading with me, you can find me on Facebook at Witchwise Seer and Witch. You can also find me over on Instagram and Tumblr with the handle Witchwise, spelled WYTCHWYSE. You can find links to all of my social media in the show notes. I hope to hear from you.